Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, Angela Alberti.
All right, Ivy Podcast listeners, thank you guys so much for tuning in. I'm very excited about today's show. I am your host, Angela Alberti, but let's keep it honest. I'm pretty excited about every show, but particularly for today's show. Michael Cirelli is who I have the privilege and honor of interviewing. Before we got started on today's show, I actually told him how much I've been following him. You guys may have heard of him or at least seen some of his videos on LinkedIn. And the Ivy Podcast is just thrilled to have the opportunity to sit down and ask him a few questions. Before we get started, just a quick reminder, guys, give us a review or some feedback on the App Store. If you have a chance, let us know what your thoughts are. We're open to receiving that feedback, but it also helps us get in front of more listeners like yourself. We're in 37 different countries now, and we've had close to 200,000 global listeners. So we are just honored to be able to have this platform and have the opportunity to interview people like Michael. Mike, tell us a little bit about yourself. Give us a brief introduction, the elevator pitch, if you will.
The elevator pitch. Born and raised in the Bay Area. I enlisted in the Marine Corps, served in their version of special operations in the late 90s, early 2000s. And then God bless the military. They've pretty much given me everything. They sent me back to Texas A&M to get my bachelor's degree. Then I switched over to the SEALs, served in the SEALs for 15 years again. And then again, the military helped me get my MBA. 10 combat deployments, served at the highest tactical level known as the Tier 1 Forces or Special Mission Unit. Now I'm in the game of leadership development and executive search with a management consulting firm. An executive search firm called Talent War Group. Oh, I wrote a book. It didn't do all that bad, called The Talent War.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Well, first of all, you guys may hear this, but I love this country and I appreciate everything that you guys do to selflessly serve in this country. So thank you for that. And thank you for all of those years of dedication into that. Now, I think it's just fascinating to hear about the elevator pitch and now your involvement in leadership and executive search. How did that transition happen? How did you identify that's the industry? Because I always say staffing, recruiting, you know, that it's not an industry that you grow up wanting to be in when you're 8 years old. It's an industry that finds you. So how did it find you?
Yeah, you don't go from the Joint Special Operations Command, which is that those Tier 1 forces, to executive search. In fact, if somebody had told me right before I retired that I would be in executive search, I probably would have punched them in the face. And
that's awesome.
No, it's we often inherit our teams in the military. You're given a group of guys and you're told that's your guys. But you know, the SEALs, the Green Berets, Special Operations go through. They put a lot of time and money into the selection of those personnel. So while leading a team and setting a culture is important, creating the team in the first place is equally as important, if not the foundation, to success. And so when I got out, I took an executive level role at the Texas A&M system. I just wasn't finding my purpose and passion, even though I was working for a great leader, John Sharp. And I knew something about building high performing teams and then leading them as well. Mm-hmm. And it was, again, it's always, you know, your wife or your husband that says, why don't you go do that then? And I'm like, you know what? You're right. And so we started a company. It was originally called EF Overwatch. My two partners, or one of my main partners, was Jocko Willink. And eventually that relationship sort of evolved. And I said, hey guys, I'm taking EF Overwatch and I'm turning it into to Talent War Group. And we split. Relationship is still great. Still, highly respect Jocko, but just have a different view on leadership and how to approach it. But I'll tell you this, I'm having so much fun. There's nothing like having an impact on a company, from placing a great executive into their company or coming in there and helping them create a leadership development system. And then also it's good to be in charge of a team again. I've got a young team. I've also got my co-author, George Randall, and my partner, Carly Walden, but I've got a team again. I've got a tribe, and watching these young subordinate leaders evolve and maturate at a quicker rate than our competition because we practice what we preach. We're giving them leadership development every week. I'm having fun. I didn't think I was going to have fun outside of the SEALs, man. But no, yeah. I'm having a lot of fun.
That's awesome. And impacting lives every day with either the company that you guys place in or the lives that you guys change when you make that personal decision to go to a particular company. So that's awesome. You probably have noticed stepping into the industry, and this is me just being, you know, frank about things, but it's an industry with not the best reputation, right? So what were your traditional hiring practices that you noticed within the agency life or within staffing and recruiting? And what did you guys do to change that narrative?
So let me say this. For whatever reason, the human resources function and the TA function are completely, and I apologize for my dog in the background.
No, that's all right.
Yeah. He's doing his job, so I can't yell. it's discounted.
Yeah.
It's discounted, and I don't understand why. You read about the best CEOs in the world, and they all consider themselves basically human resources executives. They said, we're in the business of people.
Yeah.
And great CEOs spend more time developing their people and building the team than they actually do worried about the function, the guts of the business, because they know they have the right talent in place. So look at it this way. CHROs, and this is from the research we collected, traditionally make 3 times less than their C-suite counterparts. If that
Incredible.
Doesn't de-emphasize the strategic nature of that position, I don't know what does. Or if there are C-suite positions, the highest HR person is the director or VP of HR. You know, a great leader, not far from you and I, Joe DePinto, he was a West Point graduate. I'm a fan of the West Point. I think it's one of the finest institutions in our land. He's the CEO of 7-Eleven. He says the CHRO is in his hip pocket at all times. If he goes to the bathroom, the CHRO is right there. That CHRO travels with Joe. They're always asking. They're looking at succession planning. They're looking, do we have the right people in the right seats? What are we doing to bring the next level, the next generation of talent into the organization? And when you take that strategic approach towards HR as a CEO, you're playing the long game. You are playing the long game and you're setting your organization up for success. Again, the reason we wrote the book, The Talent War, How Special Operations and Great Organizations Win on Talent. It's special operations knows that the secret sauce to special operations is not our technology. It's our people. It always has been, and it always will be.
Yeah. Well, that's absolutely fantastic. I love how you guys are getting those nuances of everything that you guys learned in the services and now applying it to the corporate world. Now let's say a lot of what you guys do is consultative, talking to your clients and letting them know best practices. You've hired the talent. You've identified that rock star executive. Now what? Now what is the approach that they should take to keep them enthralled and keep them within the culture and the basis of the company for the long run?
You just said it. What most people do, what 99% of people do is they say, hey, we just hired a rock star. And they go with the just do your job approach. Just do your job. Do what we hired you to do. And that doesn't work. And I know some people have heard, I'm blanking on the New England Patriots coach who said, you know, is the
title. Belichick.
Yeah, thank you. Belichick, just do your job. While you have to perform, it goes beyond that. When you hire anyone, whether it's an executive or that young 18 to 22-year-old, it starts on day one. Mm-hmm. You set the tone. Onboarding is one of the biggest missed opportunities. So you met Michelle, one of my young employees, who already is the director of marketing. 6 months on the job, she's already the director of marketing, fresh out of St. Edward's
University. She was an intern with you guys, I saw too, just not too long ago. What an incredible ride she's been on.
All-star. And the first day she sat down, like I do with all our subordinate leaders, is I told her, I need you to understand one thing. And actually, she started with a gal named Naira, who also just has so much potential. Naira's from Brazil. I said, you guys are leaders. And I need you to understand that on day one. And I need you to behave like your leaders within this organization. Now, you're not going to get a team right away. And all great leaders learn how to follow it first. But you're entitled to your perceptions and you're entitled to your experiences, which are different than my life experiences, even though I'm 20 years older than you. And if you see something that doesn't make sense, I expect you to step up and say something. And they came back to me, I think it had to be 3 weeks later, and they said, we've never had any employer say that to us. You saw they sort of sat up straight and they felt like part of the team. You hire that person, you let them know. You have to assimilate them to the culture. We talk about values of a culture. So a CEO has espoused values, what we want our culture to be. But guess what? As a leader, we don't get to determine if we're a good leader or not. Your people do. As a CEO, we don't get to determine what our culture is. Your people do. It's how they behave. Leadership and culture are actions, they're behaviors. And so you have to put time into building genuine relationships with your employees. Now, can a CEO build relationships with a 2,000 person company? No. But I expect my immediate leaders in charge of them to build genuine relationships and continually drive the values home through leadership development so that we see the behaviors that we hold dear. And so when you hire somebody, the best way I can put it to summarize that is that's when the real work begins. Let me say this, the business world is not good at leadership development, coaching, and mentoring. Mm-hmm. The top MBA programs don't train their people in those subjects. I remember the dean of the University of Texas MBA program when I was there as a student. Remember, I'm 39, just come from JSOC. I've been leading people for 20 years, some of the most high-performing humans arguably in the world. And he said, we produce leaders. And I didn't want to be unprofessional. I'd waited till after. And I came up and said, hey, sir, I professionally and tactfully want to like vehemently disagree with you. You don't. You produce business practitioners and they're damn good. In fact, I'm learning more from these 27 year olds about finance and accounting than I am from the professors to help me out, but they're not leaders.
Right.
Not yet. That takes time. And you guys don't have a established leadership development system, which is what most companies lack. And because of, as you know, if you're not leading well, your employees are disengaged, which is costing you a lot of money. Your attrition is climbing. Your customer service is going down. There's no innovation. There's no collaboration and there's no teamwork. And so that's why this thing, leadership and getting the right talent in the door and then leading and continually developing them is so wildly important, and CEOs gloss over it for the most part.
It's incredible how that notion that you just mentioned, I mean, it gave me goosebumps. If I could be sitting there and having you as a boss to tell me that with not a lot of work experience, but it's so contrarian to everything that we've seen. I think the ones that kind of go to the top in the leadership role organically find themselves in that space, and it's not really dwindled down into everyone or seeped into the culture. So talk about a culture of innovation. Now, the characteristics, I've seen a couple of your videos on this, the 9 foundational characteristics of a leader. How do you develop that? Because everyone is not in a leadership space or in a mental space to handle that. What can you say about those characteristics that I'd love for you to expand on?
So, this chapter caused more consternation amongst the three people, because we had Dr. Josh Cotton, an IO clinical psychologist who develops attribute assessments for a living. So he's passionate. We had to talk him off the cliff a couple of times. You have George with his preconceived notions. I'm a very strong-headed guy. And so we had a list of like 50 attributes at first. And we're like, there's no way anyone can screen people for 50 attributes.
Right.
And we looked at the special operations community, the Green Berets, the Navy SEALs, the 75th Ranger Regiment, MARSOC. They all had a list of attributes that they hold dear. And they're so close to one another. The way I put it is the Navy SEALs and the Green Berets are both looking for ice cream, just slightly different flavors. And they do have slightly different missions, but we got it down to 9. And again, to say you could screen for 9 attributes in an interview is very tough to do. Right. So when we talk about interviewing, one, a lot of people just rush, hey, we just lost our marketing director, we need to go find a new one. Rather than taking the time to sit down and say, okay, hey, if that marketing director was great, maybe a company plucked them out of our company, what were the attributes that made that person so great? How do we find somebody just like that? Hopefully they're higher in loyalty to the organization, right, not to leave for a higher offer. But yeah, what was it about that person? So you're defining success in the role. Mm-hmm. And then you start the search. Mm-hmm. And speed is not a good indicator in the hiring process. We've all heard the adage, hire slowly, fire quickly. It's so true. Mm-hmm. A lot of companies lack a process. But back to the 9 attributes, everyone, I'll put it to you this way, it's not binary. When we talk about resiliency, it's not a 0 and 1. You either have resiliency or you don't. Think about it as more of a Verostat between 0 and 100. Everyone has resiliency to some degree. Some people are very high in resiliency, close to 100, and some people are not, and their score is 20% resiliency. Everyone has these attributes to a degree. You talk about high performing individuals. Narcissism is an attribute that high performers have. Anyone who says, "Oh, I'm not a narcissist," and you're a high performer, you're actually wrong. You have it to
100%.
Yeah. So, you know, you're screening for specific attributes in each function, in each role. There are certain attributes that are organizationally common. This person has to have integrity. That to us is a 0 or 1. You either have integrity or you don't. But you have your cultural values. You want to screen people for those attributes. And then each function has their own set of attributes. What you need in an engineer is drastically different from what you need in somebody in a sales role. But as a leadership development system, you can build people up in certain attributes. It takes time. It's frustrating. It doesn't happen overnight. I was a very unruly kid, teenager, when I entered the Marine Corps. And after a few years, to give you an example, I graduated high school with a 2.9. After a few years in the Marine Corps, and they poured into me in leadership development, they saw some things they didn't like. They had to beat that out of me, not quite literally, but use that term. They reinforced those values. Just a few years later, when they sent me to Texas A&M, I graduated with a 3.7. I assure you, I didn't get smarter over those few years. I had learned the values. I learned about honor, courage, and commitment. I learned about performance and commitment especially. And so it is possible. And that's why we believe that the military and the special operations community have pretty much developed the best in class leadership development system. And a lot of people have misconceptions about military. I'm going to put it out there right now. That's what you see by Universal Studios and Paramount, and they don't pay military leaders kindly. The best military leaders I knew were kind. They were quiet. They were empathetic. They were respectful, and they never yelled. They never yelled.
Wow.
People gravitated towards them because of who they were, and they made everyone around them better. To include myself, I was not that leader. I was somebody who benefited from world-class mentors. And lastly, we lead through love in the military. And a lot of people don't realize that. I love my people, which means if I love them, I'm going to hold them accountable. A lot of people don't like to be held accountable. But if I fail to, Angela, hold you accountable if you do something wrong, then how are you going to learn? And how are you going to become a leader that's eventually better than I am? So there's a way to hold people accountable with professionalism and tact. And if they know you're doing it from the bottom of your heart, they will understand and they'll improve. And then lastly, I didn't realize it until I got out, but I loved my people, my men and women, a lot more than I hated the enemy. So we get from business leaders that are like, hey, we don't want you to bring your military stuff into here. And that's because they've never served in the military. And what they've seen in the movie has just put this bad perception in their minds.
Wow. Holy shit, Mike, that was amazing. And it's incredible to see how these characteristics have seeped into the mindset. And for me, I'm absorbing this all like a sponge because I'm a co-founder and leader of the space. And we just started a company, we're evolving, we're creating the foundational elements of the culture that we want to bring in. And now we're in this future of work state that was heightened and fast forwarded by the pandemic. How the hell do we do that now that we're all remote? Like literally, how can we create this culture of innovation and leadership through a remote psyche where we're messaging each other and not having that camaraderie that we had, 2 feet away from each other? What are your thoughts on that?
There's a few issues I want to unpack here, and you're now motivating me. I got goosebumps with this conversation.
Good.
So one, culture is so important, and you have to talk about culture. You have to have this conversation often about culture with your people. Because again, you don't get to determine your culture as a founder and leader of the organization, Angela. Your people ultimately do.
Right.
And within Talent Work Group, we were getting a little misaligned. We had what I call a level set meeting, which is basically a 360 review where Michelle and all our subordinate leaders could give criticism to the leadership. And it was one of the most productive conversations. And we said, okay, we need to make some changes, guys. We are a startup too. It's like building an airplane as it goes down the runway. We're at 10,000 feet. We thought we could go to 20. The second we went to 20, the flap started to to come off. And we said, hey, we got to go back to 10,000. That's fine. You know, there is, I worked with a CEO the other day. He's like, if we can just get to this revenue figure, we can coast. And I'm like, that notion of we can just coast, that doesn't exist. That's a fallacy. No, just perfection. No one's ever perfect. There's always room for improvement. And if you think you can coast, I guarantee you, your next quarter is going to be a down quarter.
Yes.
So you've got to be very careful about your culture. And the thing too is, like, I don't care if you have a 150,000 person organization, one person can affect the culture. Each new person you bring in has the ability to affect your culture either negatively or positively. And that's how, that's why hiring is such an important decision. So the remote environment, it's tough. You can't tell me, nobody can look me in the face with a straight face and say, hey, no, you can build teams in a remote environment. It's very tough to do. So, you know, I understand the environment has changed. So us as business leaders, we need to change. We need to figure out how to do this. Is it by holding weekly Zoom sessions where we don't talk about business, we just build relationships? I don't know. And everyone's trying to figure that out. Mm-hmm. I will tell you what I've seen in the military, in the Marine Corps is a good example, is there's this sense of what we call shared adversity, a sense of homecoming and belonging that we've all been through hardship together. And that has forged bonds that just can't be broken. The Marine Corps specifically calls it esprit de corps, which is a French term, again, for pride, loyalty, homecoming, and belonging. Now, we run something within Talent War Group called Into the Wild Extreme, where we take companies into the wild. Again, it's not like buds training. It's very safe. We push them a little outside their, their physical and mental comfort zones. But when people come out of the 5 days in the field with us, you see these smiles and this pride in there. Even if somebody was just the negative Nancy the entire time, they're high-fiving their other employees saying, we did that together. And you see this alignment that just usually you don't see in the business world. So you've got to be careful. Building that sense of homecoming and belonging is key to people wanting to drive that organization forward. Mm-hmm. If they just view their organization as, this is just a job, I'm just collecting a paycheck, I'm telling you that you have a person that's not going to move heaven and earth to make sure that the organization succeeds. They're going to put their needs ahead of the organization. And that just, that results in a very, very bad culture.
Wow. That's pretty incredible. I think it all comes down to, you know, communicating as effectively and as frequently as possible. What is the basis of your culture? What are you doing to bring that notion into the thought process of each new hire? Which it's really impactful for me to listen to at this point in time in my specific career point right now. So some fantastic stuff. Now,
can I add one point?
Sure.
In that same meeting, a lot of our employees are younger. I was trying to understand, did they want to work remotely? Because a lot of their friends are now working remotely. And I said, hey guys, I know we have an office space. Well, I can lease this office space. Do you want to work from home? And all the 20-year-olds said, no, we collaborate more, better together in here. We get more work done and we're aligned. And I was shocked. And I stopped and I'm like, don't tell me what I want to hear. I'm being serious. I want to know, do you guys want to work remotely? And they said, no. So I think that's a testament to the people we hired that know that they have to, you know, do what they need to do to get things done. And I was,
well, it's a testament to the culture that you've built. It really is. That's the biggest testament, I think, that you see from that. I think that's fantastic. And I think there's a lot lost in the remote world that you don't have, you know, working alongside with one another with the camaraderie and everything that's going on. But you do have to be unique. Nowadays, there's virtual offices, and I think it's going to be a reality. And you've given us some great feedback as to what we can do, how you can actually align with one another. Having a feedback session where you give critical, where you allow your staff to give critical elements to the leadership, what can I do to improve as a leader? What am I missing out on? I think it's the first time I've ever heard that, but it's really refreshing to hear that. And that is what I want to do with my staff as soon as I get off this Zoom, because it needs to be done. And that sort of feedback needs to be heard. And going back to kind of the current state of things, you may have heard about this. Actually, I'm 100% positive you're hearing about this now. It's the war on retention. You know, a lot of people were talking about 2021 is going to be the year of the great rehire. And it certainly has been, like 9.8 million job openings. people leaving their current job. We had nearly 6 million people leave their job in 2 months. Now we're dealing with potentially some generational impacts of what is that younger generation, the millennials, the Gen Zers, that average tenure is about 3 years as opposed to, you know, the baby boomer who stayed 40 years. What are your thoughts on that? I guess retention in the future, is that something that companies should go for 100% knowing that the world is changing? Or what are your thoughts on this grand exodus that's happening right now with the great resignation, I think is what they've coined it as.
So the biggest cause of retention, whether you're not retaining people or you're retaining your people, is
leadership.
It's leadership and culture. It's leadership and culture. I chose to take risk where I knew I was not going to make money for about 3 years to start my own thing because I wasn't happy with the leadership within my first organization. I'll give you another example. I didn't think I was going to make a career out of the military. In fact, you know, I was going to do 4 years as a SEAL officer, which would have set me up for an MBA program, get out and go make a lot of money. And I've never worked with such world-class leaders as I did in the SEAL and special operations community. And that's what kept me in. They, you know, the old proverb, iron sharpens iron, so as one person sharpens another. There was no way I was leaving that organization when I was working for leaders that took the time every Friday, like Chris Fussell, who's the president of the McChrystal Group, who wrote the book, Team of Teams with Stanley McChrystal, as well as his book, One Mission. Every Friday, mandatory, it wasn't optional for me, in his office at 10 a.m., along with some other officers, and it was 2 hours of professional development. And I am the man I am today. I wouldn't say I'm the leader I am today, because I still have a lot of work to do, is because of mentors like that. I am a product of my mentors. So if you want to retain your people, the bar is on you as leaders of an organization to lead, which means, again, creating a culture of accountability, continually improving people, giving them stretch goals, you know, making them better than you are. That's the whole goal of a leader, is to make your subordinate leaders below you better than you. And that hurts people's ego. I always hope the organization I'm a part of, when I leave, it actually accelerates at a quicker rate. That's my goal. That's my legacy that I'm trying to leave behind. But retention, so it is a different environment. I get it. You know, there's no other way to cut it. Anyone wants to argue to me that, you know, retention is caused by somebody getting a higher offer, that comes down to leadership again. And this is why business leaders within America, we have to be good at what we do. And we're not, you know, we're not creating leadership development systems within higher education to make sure that we're not only producing practitioners within certain fields, we're producing leaders in every single industry. I'll say this too, government policy matters. There's an old phrase, if you don't take interest in politics, politics will assuredly take an interest in you. Right now, while I understand some people are hurting, we got to be very careful to incentivize people to just stay home and not take a job. And we've caught ourselves, we're in a catch 22 here. Additionally, you know, we're here talking about leadership. We expect one place, one region in this country to be the very best to set the example for leadership. And that's Washington, D.C., the national capital region. And we get the exact opposite. And I'm not talking about parties here. I'm talking about both parties.
Yeah,
we're not seeing just exemplary leadership from from our elected officials. And that sets the tone for the rest of the nation. Now, I'm not saying this country is going to hell in a handbasket. I think every generation says that. We're fine. This is the greatest country in the world. We have our share of problems. But our leaders better start stepping up. They better start acting with civility and professionalism and tact. And they better demonstrate that at the end of the day, you're not identified by your party. You're identified by the title American. So figure a way to work it out for the good of the people and move this country forward. And we're not seeing that right now.
Yeah. I think that's a fantastic take. That is the most unique response I've received to that question. And bringing it back to what a lot of the younger generation is seeing at a national level when it comes to the political impact that we've seen the last, I don't know, several years and how that can seep into workplace culture. That is truly insightful. Also, big kudos to you on your development as a leader and the mentioning of the mentors that you've had along the way, spoken with true humility, which I admire and I respect. But now let's go a little bit personal. I'd love to know what Mike Cirelli reads. Like, what do you stay up to date on? What are you, you know, digesting mentally and intellectually every single day to help you have this this mentality that you approach with every single day at work?
So some of the greatest mentors that we have in our careers are people that we've never met. They're called authors. And so, right. You know, I've got a great, I love this woman so much. Her name is Lisa Jaster. Okay. She was the third woman in the history of the Army to graduate from Ranger School. She was the first trial class. She did it at the age of 37, when most men go through Ranger School in their early 20s. And she was also a mother of two. She got it done. She's an amazing leader, and she calls it leadership through readership. So I do read, and right now, George, myself, the author of The Attributes, Rich DeVinny, Brian Decker, who's the director of player development for the Indianapolis Colts, and then Tom Mokar, who's a serial CHRO. We're writing a book on leadership and culture. So that takes a lot of time. That digs into my ability to read, but I'm always finding opportunities right now. I've become a big steward of stoicism, which a lot of people have, misconceptions on. It's not being stoic like a statue.
Right.
But
that's where my mind went.
No. It's like the prayer of serenity. I'm going to screw this up. Darn it. Lord, help me to
accept the things that I cannot exchange.
To change the things that I can.
And the wisdom to know the difference. Right.
Yeah. And that's basically what stoicism is, ignoring the things that you can't control, focus on the things that you can. It's helping develop my leadership stance and evolving it. So that's what I'm reading right now.
Oh, that's awesome. So tell me a little bit about the process. You guys wrote The Talent War, and I follow George as well on LinkedIn. What was that experience like for you guys to write that? And how is that whole process now that it's been out, it's published? I think you can get it on Amazon. I need to get my copy.
We'll send you.
Okay. Awesome. Great. But tell me what that experience has been like for you guys.
So apparently publishers don't accept manuscripts written in Quran. So we have to go back and hire somebody to type it up
for you guys.
Yes. No, I'm joking. Neither of us have written a book. And I called him one night and said, hey man, we've got all these good things. We see these employers struggling with the hiring process. You've been in that industry for 20 years. I'm coming from special operations. Why don't we write a book? And he's like, let's do it. And so you start, and everyone loves their idea. Let's start this company. And then when the work starts, people are like, yeah, okay, we weren't prepared for this. It took us a long time. Midway through, we're like, hey, this is never going to happen. Why don't we just quit? But we stuck with it. And it's amazing that it ever came to fruition, because even the final manuscript, we did like 15 revisions of that until somebody said, hey, do you hate your own book? And we're like, yeah, we hate it. And they're like, you're ready to publish it then. And they're like, you just got to get it out there. No book. That's why there's things called editions. Like, if you want to go back and revise things, then you do a second edition. And, because the book did well, it was bestseller in 11 categories on Amazon. We're like, hey, let's do it again. Now we're like, oh crap. It's like going back to school. You're like, oh, I want to go back to school. You go back to school and you're like, never again.
Yeah.
But it tries. If you have a co-author, it definitely puts a strain on the relationship. Cause you disagree on certain things and somebody's got to compromise. And we did, we always found a way to compromise. And we actually, the other thing about writing a book, here's the biggest thing, two things. One, you're educating yourself. I mean, we went in with some preconceived notions of like, this is how you do this. And as we talked and did interviews and research, we're like, you know what? We're actually wrong. This is actually how you do it correctly. Or there's a better way of doing X, Y, and Z. And so you become a better leader writing a book, because you're in this thought and self-reflection process. And then two, something we couldn't have realized is we've met so many good people that love this subject as well. And we just didn't understand that. And I'm on this podcast with you, and I wouldn't have met you if it wasn't for the book. And we're so grateful when people weigh in. And sometimes we go like, hey, I didn't agree with this part of the book. We're like, yes, tell us. Like, please, what didn't you agree with? Let's talk about it. And we've gotten some great feedback from business leaders that read the book that maybe didn't agree with certain things, but we've also received a lot of feedback from businesses that are like, we're incorporating your system into our hiring process. We're going with your recommendations on how to hire moving forward. So, it's been a journey. It's been a journey. And my parents of all the kids didn't think that I was going to be one
a published writer.
Yes. And like my brother and sister are like the idiot of the family, and now a published best-selling author. And I'm like, you got to put yourself out there.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, kudos to you and George, and good luck on your next book and everything that you guys are crazy enough to give it another go for. I know that you guys will have much success. So now that we're wrapping up today's session, tell the listeners out there, what is the best way to get a hold of Mike Cirelli?
Oh, so let me give you a few things. Because of the book, some opportunities fell on my plate. So the best way to get a hold of me is through Talent War Group on my shirt here, talentwargroup.com. I've got an amazing team. Again, we do leadership development, design, training, executive search. We also do HR and talent acquisition consulting with some foremost experts. Because of the book, Men's Journal approached me to write an article. So I write an article for Men's Journal called The Everyday Warrior. It's a no hack, which means no shortcut, practical approach to living a purpose-filled and happy life, because I want people to be happy. I was in Charlotte Airport waiting for my layover. Some guy sits down. You could tell he's already had a few drinks, and you got these tears. And I just simply asked him, are you okay? And his longtime girlfriend had just left him. I sat there for 30 minutes and talked with him. We prayed together. And I just want people to be happy. And that's why I'm writing the article. That's why we started a podcast. A company approached me to do a fully funded podcast called Truth Plus Tribe. And then I'm launching a brand called Atta, which is a fitness supplement and apparel brand with the people that own Men's Journal. And that launches in October. The name of the company is Atta, ATTA, step at a time. That's how you achieve goals. And to launch that company, I'm jumping skydiving into Mount Everest in October to raise money for the Special Operations Warrior Foundation. So we've got a lot going on. I feel completely blessed. And if I, my whole goal right now is just to give back to other people. If I can impact lives, that is the greatest currency in my book, not money. It's impact.
That is amazing. That is definitely the goosebump factor. You guys also, if y'all aren't following Mike on LinkedIn, you've got to follow him. Those videos that you guys post, and if Michelle's at the forefront of what you guys are doing on that, and big kudos to her, but those are really a heightened part of my day. And I know that they're a heightened part of many other people's day out there as well. So major congratulations. And like I mentioned, an absolute honor to sit with you and interview you today, Mike. So thank you for your time. Thank you for our listeners' time as well. Time is the greatest gift that we can give other people. So I appreciate you guys joining us, and I appreciate your time as well, Mike. Y'all take care, and we will see you guys on the next episode.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.